This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It's the mortal conflict of kingdoms, the mortal conflict of kingdoms, and we're going to see how all of this is playing out, even as the United States of America has dropped the most intensive bombing raid upon the various nuclear sites in Iran, claiming total victory with inerrant direction to destroy all of those nuclear sites. And at the same time, then, Iran attacks our site, our major military site in Qatar. And then we find in Russia, the former president of Russia, Medvedev, is now claiming that the nations are prepared to arm Iran with nuclear warheads after the U.S. strikes. And Tehran is warning Iranians, do not install Elon Musk's Starlink internet. Well, what does all this have in common? It has in common the idea that ultimately all of these things are about kingdoms in conflict. But you say, yes, we know that. We know that there are kingdoms in conflict. It's Israel versus Iran, and Russia's in the middle of it, and then China, and then Turkey, and all of these countries, yeah, kingdoms in conflict. But the question is, what is the nature of that conflict? You see, if we don't identify with clarity the nature of the conflict, then we don't understand what the conflict is all about. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to connect dots that you might think otherwise are unconnectable, that don't relate, but they do relate. And they relate over the theme, kingdoms in conflict, or the conflict of kingdoms. And so I'm glad that you've joined us here on Viewpoint today. As conversation as always, with ever intent, increasing conviction, talk that transforms. You say, what kind of conviction could come from a discussion with kingdoms in conflict or transformation? Well, you'd be surprised. You would be surprised. And so, indeed, what is really happening, here's a possible way of interpreting the things that are happening in our world now. It's like a great parable that's being played out on several levels, like playing chess on several levels. So it's a somewhat of a complex game of chess or parable. But indeed, when you look at the complete picture, you begin to see that there is indeed a commonality that emerges from the chess game that's being played on several levels, that forms in effect a parable that speaks into our lives for this moment in history here on the near edge of the second coming of Jesus Christ. So that's just to set a stage for you as to where we're going here today on the program, so that it won't take you unawares, and that you will be prepared in some way to receive the connection of various dots that otherwise you wouldn't think of that way, just because we tend to categorize things in ways that keep us from thinking in other ways that connect them. And so that's what we're going to look at here today on Viewpoint. Kingdoms in conflict, indeed, if the reality is known, when kingdoms seek to control, seek to import or export their beliefs, their power, their privileges, their perks, whatever it is, their principles, when they seek to impose those on another country, they do so through what we call persecution. Now, persecution, we don't normally think of the imposition of a kingdom values and so on. We think of it in terms of unfair, unjust, things that are done to people that seem so unfair, so unreasonable, so gross, so dangerous, and so on. Well, indeed, they are those things. But why are they happening? They're happening because some kingdom somewhere wants to impose its viewpoint on another kingdom. And if we understand it that way, we can understand indeed why, for instance, communism versus those countries that want to embrace a democratic republic, why they are in conflict, why fascism is in conflict with a democratic republic, why socialism is in conflict with a democratic republic and with the Bible itself. All of these things, you see, the conflicts are intermixed. We can label them as geopolitical context. We can conflicts. We can label them as spiritual conflicts. We can label them as economic conflicts. But bottom line, the conflicts actually reflect one group, one belief system's effort to superimpose their viewpoint on another group, another country, another people, another viewpoint, another religion, and so on, so that there are kingdoms in conflict, and they seek to superimpose their belief systems by force or threat of force upon those who will not accept the intrusion of the other kingdoms and their belief systems. If we understand that in its totality, it makes it much more acceptable, much more interesting, much more believable to understand, for instance, why persecution is growing. Persecution in our country and around the world is growing because the conflict of the kingdoms from which it's coming is growing. The intensity of the need and or perceived need and desire to impose these other belief systems and to prevent another from being able to express their viewpoint, their belief system, these things are coming into what you might say mortal conflict. In other words, the conflict is becoming more deadly. It's becoming more severe. And so if we understand it that way, we can talk about Iran and what's going on there. We can talk about Russia and its response. We can talk about the Islamic world and its response to all of this. We can talk about Turkey and its inner response. But we can also talk about why persecution is increasing so dramatically around the world. And we're going to talk about all of it here on the program today and see the connecting dots so that we don't just kind of put in a separate box all of these things, but they do all link together. They really, really do. So before we go further, let me just present to you my book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Our Hearts for Perilous Times, because those are the times we're living in. $20, we'll put that $25 book in your hands on our website, saveus.org.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you to Viewpoint. Viewpoint does determine destiny. There are no questions about that. Any viewpoint has some way of determining and setting destiny. So our viewpoints are critically important, as they are with regard to understanding, comprehending what's going on between Israel and Iran, where Russia fits into the picture, where Turkey fits into the picture, the resolution or respect of the Islamic world, and so on. So we open the program today focusing specifically on Iran and what's happening there. And then we'll connect the dots to the broader persecution aspect. Iran has a very, very specific and serious focus. It's called the Islamic Revolution. The Islamic Revolution took over in 1979 in response or communicating to the Iranian people that the Shah that existed at that time was operating as an unjust, unfair, despotic king and had to be overturned. We're going to bring in Sharia law. We're going to bring in true Muslim life and make that the rulership of Iran or Persia. And so they did. The unfortunate thing is that in order to protect and preserve that fundamentalist view, they had to do it by force or threat of force. And that's where the even prison has come in, one of the most hated prisons in the world. And so that prison, at least the entry to it, was bombed over this past weekend. Why? Not to get rid of the prison, but to let it be known that that prison represents a kingdom that's in conflict with the rest of the world, and certainly with the Democratic Republic aspect of the rest of the world and with Israel, and cannot be allowed to stand. It must be freed. So, then, today, Benjamin Netanyahu announced from Israel that the war in Israel with against Iran is almost over. It will be over in a few days. Well, certainly the attack on the Fordow nuclear site, 300 feet underground, was a horrible situation, but was done with a bunch of bunker buster bombs, and then the attack on several other nuclear sites at the same time was a pretty dramatic attack on a regime led by Ali Khamenei. And now there is talk that the other leaders in Iran are preparing to move Ali Khamenei out of leadership and install somebody else in leadership. Well, does that mean there's going to be a change of belief, a change in operations and so on? I don't think so, because it's endemic to who they are, what they stand for, why they very well exist starting in 1979. So that's not going to happen. You can replace Khamenei and somebody else equally adept at fundamentalist Islam under Sharia law will take over until that system is eliminated. But what if those lurking behind that adopt a similar kind of system, just not under direct Sharia law? For instance, reinstall the Shah. Well, that's another possibility. The crown prince of Persia, of Iran, Reza Pahlavi, the son of the former Shah of Iran, is calling for regime change in Iran. He said, this is our Berlin Wall moment. So when Ronald Reagan addressed the then president of Russia and said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down, that wall, the Berlin Wall, represented a division, a representation of the conflict of kingdoms between communism and the Western world. Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down. So now Mr. Reza Pahlavi says, basically, it's time to tear the wall down. the wall that fundamentalist Islam threw the Islamic Revolution, which operates as a separate governmental kind of entity, has already established and has divided the people even within Iran. You're either for us or you're against us. You're either a supporter of fundamentalist Islam in its most radical form, requiring that Sharia law rule the entire world, and that Iran is destined to rule the world as the vanguard of the Islamic Revolution. You don't believe that, you're out. You are not part of the kingdom that's in conflict with the rest of the world. So Iran's belief system requires that they be the agency to create such chaos in the world through nuclear power, whatever means, insurgencies in other countries, whatever it takes to create that situation, that sense among nations, so that the Islamic Mahdi, Messiah, can be introduced and take over and rule the Islamic Revolution to take over the entire world under Islamic law, Sharia law. Mr. Pahlavi says, no, we're preparing for an alternative form of government. We want a democratic Iran and would stop the development of its nuclear program. So he's offering perspective on core principles that he believes the Iranian nation should live by: territorial integrity, individual liberties, equality of all citizens, and separation of religion and state. He directly addressed the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, saying, step down, and if you do, you will receive a fair trial and the due process of law, which is more than you have ever given to any Iranian. Supporters of the Iranian opposition group gathered to protest against the nuclear program and the detention of EU nationals in Paris. So turning to the regime officials as well, Pahlavi said that they too would face justice, adding that the mistake of other failed transitions would not, however, be repealed. This is our Berlin Wall moment. It's another way of saying this is the Fisher Cup bait moment for the Iranian people. The kingdoms are in conflict. We have waited for such a moment, and this is our moment. What will happen? What will be the increasing intensity or the diminishing of intensity, even as Iran and Khamenei have promised now that the war will come to the United States, and that secret sects here in the United States are going to be now authorized to begin to bring terror upon the United States. Why do they do that? Because they believe that in order to bring about the success of their kingdom superiority, it must be done not only through conflict, but through the imposition on other people. Without their will, they must be brought into submission. And that's the name, that is the meaning of the word Islam, submission. You will either submit by force or threat of force. If you submit by threat of force, in other words, you don't force us to go into battle against you, then your life will most likely be saved, but you will be placed under a massive tax system that will render you a second or third class person and will never be able to have sufficient resources to mount an opposition to the regime. That's where it's coming from. Now, Erdogan in Turkey wants to do the same thing. He believes that the Turks should be raising up a resurrected Ottoman Empire that once ruled the world, just as the Persians once ruled the world. And so these two kingdoms are in conflict. They each claim to support Sharia law. But each one of them, through pride, power, perks, and position, is intended to rule the world under Sharia law. One as a resurrected Ottoman Empire, which is ruled by Turks, and the other a resurrected Persian Empire ruled by Persians. Notice neither the Turks nor the Persians are Arabs. So the Arab world is the odd man out in this big battle. Now, that doesn't mean the Arab world doesn't want power, perks, and position. They do. But they're struggling to find their footing, because of the immense conflict coming from Persia and Iran that once ruled the world. Because the Arabs did not once rule the world, although under Muhammad, they came close. Now, those are the tripartite, shall we say, focuses of this great war. It's not just Israel versus Iran. Iran just happens to be the temporary focus, the point of the sword of Islam. But there are others that are coming in. Erdogan is supporting the Iranian effort because it helps to support his effort, because he wants to rule the world under Sharia law as a resurrected Ottoman Empire. So these are the things that are coming together. Now, the interesting thing is that Russia now has superimposed itself on this. Nations prepared to arm Iran with nuclear warheads after U.S. strikes, says Russia's Medvedev. And Medvedev, who is a pretty hardcore guy, much like Putin over there in Russia, is saying, look, we're prepared because we value Iran as part of our power connection in the world. And because also they are a major oil and gas producer, as are we, we're going to keep that connection together. And we're working to bring nuclear power from other nations in the world in order to help support Iran, so that even if you get rid of their production of nuclear power, we're going to provide it to them anyway. Now, that's almost like a declaration of war coming from Russia. Why? Well, Russia also sees its vision to rule the world. It's a combination of a geopolitical, historical, and even spiritual vision to rule the world. Believe it or not, it goes all the way back to 1099 AD, or 999 AD, in Ukraine, Kievan Rus. And that's where Christianity was first adopted in Russia, in Ukraine, Kievan Rus. And then only several hundred years later was it actually transported into the mainline Russia and Moscow. Then it came in circuitously through the Byzantine Empire. Constantinople, when they were overrun by Muslims, came into Moscow, so that by the 1500s AD, a Russian prophet, so-called prophet, said, Russia is the third Rome, and there will never be another. So you can see now these dots have been connected. These are the power brokers in our world today. And it's being played out geopolitically. The geopolitics of it are not the real battle. The real battle is why these kingdoms are in conflict. It's a spiritual battle. That's really what it is at its heart. Now, in many respects, it's taking place in the form of persecution, which is more individual and less broad.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings. All at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Well, you can either resolve your kingdom in conflict and the reason why you're in conflict through bombs, nuclear power, tanks, drones, or you can resolve them through individual attacks or group attacks, such as to pressure the people in a smaller way throughout a country, throughout a region, and pressure them and pressure them and pressure them until they are either destroyed or conform. So we're going to take a look at that aspect now of the kingdoms in conflict and why persecution actually represents the more private, intense expression of the reasons why these larger geopolitical conflicts are taking place. They're all spiritual at their root. One is waged with wars and rumors of wars and so-called diplomatic efforts to try to bring some measure of peace. The other is dealt with more personally, right up front, among families, in areas, regions, and so on, through persecution. And that's one of the reasons why you need to get a copy of the book, When Persecution Comes, because it's coming. It's not just coming, it's here. It's here, yes, in the United States, for exactly the same reasons. Exactly the same reasons. When a state like Colorado decides to use its judiciary to try to compel a Christian business person, a cake maker or a designer or whatever they are, to try to compel them to use their skill, their Christian skill, and particularly a unique skill, to support and encourage and drive the whole homosexual movement under threat of law. That's persecution, friends. It is an effort to use under color of law the effort to force or compel you into another kingdom. Not the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, but another kingdom that is totally opposite. You have to see it that way. We have to see it that way. Otherwise, we don't understand the dynamics of what is taking place. So I felt that today was the perfect time to tie together what's happening with Iran, what's happening with Turkey and Russia, and all these other nations seeming geopolitical, and tie it together with the numerous persecution facts that are just coming off the press here rapidly. So here we are. A Somali mother of three has lost her home, rejected by her husband for accepting Christ after watching a Jesus film. It happened in Nairobi, Kenya. This mother of three in Somalia is struggling to survive after her Muslim relatives drove her from their home and threatened to kill her for accepting Christ. She's 31 years of age, recently divorced because her husband didn't want to see her watch this Jesus film. She says, "I do not regret embracing Christianity. I have great peace in my heart." Isa, or Jesus, has been providing for me and the children for the last 3 months, and I know he will continue to provide, she said. A Christian worker had shown her and her children the Jesus film on Christmas Eve. On January 20, she said, "I decided to surrender my life, not to Islam, but to the Lord Jesus. And since that time, I experienced amazing peace in my heart and life. But as I continued watching the film while my husband was doing small business about 100 kilometers away, I felt the need to share it with my parents." So during Ramadan, she showed the film to her mother. Her mother asked questions that she was unable to answer, and so she invited her father to watch the film. And the family watched it together on March 4th. While watching the film on the suffering of Jesus on the cross, she said, "I found myself shedding tears and uttering the words, 'Oh, an innocent son of God suffering for the sins of humanity.' My father was shocked to see me crying and asked why I was crying. He felt troubled with the uttering of Jesus as the Son of God." Her father told her that Christ was not the Son of God, but only one of the prophets sent by Allah. That the film was misleading and not from God, led by the devil. When she protested and replied that he was incorrect, he says, "I have no room for you in my house anymore. Just go away with your kids." And her father immediately phoned her husband. Her father gave her 3 months to decide whether to return to Islam and her husband. My mother tried to intervene, but my father became furious, more furious, and chased me and my mother away. And after my mother denounced the Christian faith and returned to my father, well, that's when it all devolved into more threats to kill her. The whole Muslim community threatened to kill her. Why? Because of the kingdom in conflict, friends. The kingdom of Islam versus the kingdom of Christ. The kingdom is in conflict. You cannot negotiate with evil. This woman has discovered that. You cannot negotiate with evil. An 8-year-old Christian boy died from a ruptured appendix days after older Muslim students beat him so severely he required hospital treatment. It was unclear whether the beating of a second grade student in Sumatra on May 19th by 4 or 5 Muslim fifth graders caused the ruptured kidney that killed him. Results of an autopsy described several bruises on his stomach and thighs caused by blunt force trauma, included that he died from the abdominal cavity infection due to a ruptured appendix. Beaten, an 8-year-old Christian boy, beaten at the hands of Muslim students. Why? Was this just kids acting out and being kids? No. It was a battle of kingdoms, friends, being played out, yes, at the elementary school level. And parents are training their kids to respond this way. Another. Massacre of over 100 villagers in Christian area of Nigeria elicits response from president. Just yesterday, I was in a tech business needing to deal with a computer problem as a result of a massive electronic strike against our equipment. Destroyed much of it, and It was such a horrific lightning strike that it just made its way through all of our equipment, requiring us to replace our computer and printer, our broadcasting system. And I'm having to use an alternate broadcasting system here today because it's going to take weeks for us to be able to restore what was lost, at least $6,000 worth of damage. But that's not really the point here. During the time I was at this business, talking with them about my situation, what to do about it, a couple walked in. They were black, and as I listened to them, I thought, I asked them, are you from Ghana? And they said, no, we're from Nigeria. And so I, with a certain amount of holy boldness, I said, what part of Nigeria are you from, north or south? And they said, south. I said, okay, because I know the difference between north and south Nigeria. And I said, Nigeria has become one of the most dangerous places in the world for Christians. Did you know that? They said, yes, the north. What is it about the north that makes northern Nigeria the third most dangerous place in the world for Christians? It's Islam, friends, the kingdom of Islam. They will have nothing whatsoever to do with a Christian. They do not believe that a Christian should exist. If you do not voluntarily submit, you must be eradicated from the earth. That's the principle. The very principle that Muhammad expressed in the Quran and the Hadith that were written from Medina later on in his so-called revelations. So, there was a massacre. More than 100 people in a predominantly Christian village. So the Nigerian country's president has called for action against the assailants, even as a local traditional ruler tried to correct him and others about the nature of such attacks. In other words, they don't want to make it seem like it's a religious attack, but in fact, it is. It's a conflict of kingdoms. And friends, that conflict is becoming more and more intense. It's becoming more and more intense in Islamic countries. It's becoming more and more intense in Iran, in Turkey. It's becoming more and more intense in the UK, in France, in Germany, and in the United States. Everywhere. So I wrote the book, When Persecution Comes. How to prepare for perilous times, times of testing. You need to get a copy of the book, $20, on our website, saveus.org.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
It will change your life, the book, When Persecution Comes. Preparing hearts for perilous times. In fact, the perilous times are here, friends. Whether you want to admit it or not, they are here. They may not be quite as perilous here in America as they are in Nigeria or in North Korea or in China, but they're very perilous. And they're getting more perilous because the perilous nature of the resistance, cultures and kingdoms in conflict is becoming more intense. The reason it's becoming more intense is because Satan's time is short, and he knows it. And so the battle must become more intense. Whatever it takes to snuff out trust and belief in Jesus Christ is going to be done. Whether it's going to be done through force or threat of force, whether it's going to be done through traditional forms of persecution, it's going to be done, and it is being done. North Korea basically has a death sentence for anyone even closely associated with the Christian faith or anybody owning a Bible. It's just basically a death sentence. China is not much better. It's becoming more intense in China. A friend of mine has logged many a trip to China and runs an organization that many have gone to China and experience how they, in order to try to get the word of God out in China, they have to do so surreptitiously. And it's a risky business, very risky. But it's becoming even more risky. Why? Because China wants to do everything it can to keep any and all Christian influences and information, including Bibles, including human beings, out of the country. So the cross has been taken down from the churches, and the message has been replaced by a big portrait of Xi Jinping to be the supreme leader and essentially the God substitute even in so-called Christian churches in China. That's how it's going there, and you either submit to that or you're out. Now, if you're in a house church, which is a non-registered church, then by definition, you're not in submission to the rule and reign of Xi Jinping and the CCP and its power broker empire that will stand for no resistance whatsoever, do not want anything having to do with the genuine, true Christian faith, and so they will do everything they can to keep it out. So what do? They send out search parties to find house churches that have to operate under darkness. And when they find a house church leader, they arrest them and beat them, try to beat them into submission so that they will not teach or preach again in the name of Jesus. It's just like what happened in the book of Acts chapter 4, when Peter and John, you'll remember, were teaching and preaching in the temple, and they were arrested. Who arrested them? The Jewish religious leaders. Arrested them. For what? For telling people about Jesus. They didn't want them to know about Jesus. Why? Because they said, Jesus is taking away our power, perks, and position, our place with the Romans, and our fame among the people. So they were envious of him. So they brought Peter and John into their assembly, and they ordered them not to preach or teach again in the name of Jesus. Now they realized that these uneducated fishermen had been with Jesus because they spoke with boldness and not as the rest of the people, not even as the rabbis and the high priest. They spoke with boldness. In other words, they knew what they were talking about. So Peter and John respond to them, should we obey God or man? And that's going to be the question for many that many people are going to have to face. Yes, even in this country, and they're already facing it. Business people are facing it. The courts in Colorado have three times tried to override the Supreme Court to continue on with their persecution of Christian business people. You may not feel the persecution yourself, but they do. It's huge. They haven't been officially martyred, but they're being martyred through their businesses, so to speak, economically martyred, and that's just the precursor to what comes next. So this matter of persecution is an expression, the ongoing premier expression of the conflict of kingdoms as we move toward the end of the age, as we're in it. The perilous times that the Apostle Paul talked about are here. In order to be able to handle it, in order to be able to understand it, in order to be able to respond to it, in order to be able to prepare your children, your sons, your daughters, those in your spheres of influence, pastors, they don't know how to prepare. They're not willing to prepare. They're afraid. They say, I don't want to make my people afraid. Oh, they're going to be afraid, all right, when you haven't prepared them, and then they're going to come back to you and say, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you prepare me? I trusted you. This book will help everyone. Very encouraging. When persecution comes, preparing hearts for perilous times. On the website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. If your heart is mostly with the heart of the Lord, you're going to find that this book is written as if it were written by a Christian coach. Because that's the spirit in which it was written. To help God's people, to prepare them so they don't get caught unawares and unprepared. What can I do? How should I do it? What's all this look like? Yeah. All right. At least two attacks on Christians are logged every day in India. That's the latest report today. At least two attacks on Christians being reported every single day in India this year. A total of 313 incidents were recorded between January and May alone. The pattern of violence has intensified steadily over the past decade. The organization logged 834 incidents of attacks on Christians last year, up from 734 the year before and 601 the year before that. So what's going on in India? In Uttar Pradesh up in the north, the highest in the country, followed by 165 in Chhattisgarh. By the end of May, these two had so many violent cases against Christians, it was just heartbreaking. In 2022, the Supreme Court of India asked for reports on forceful conversions from the federal and state governments, but till today, no government has been able to provide documentary evidence. 12 of India's 28 states have laws that restrict religious conversions. So, Christian groups accuse of enabling Hindu nationalist attacks under the guise of anti-conversion enforcement. Christian leaders argue that these laws are misused by Hindu nationalist groups to harass and intimidate Christian communities. If this trend is not stopped immediately, it will threaten the identity and existence of the Indian Christian community in its motherland. He alleges that the legal and judicial systems are failing to protect Christian minorities and say that many of victims avoid reporting assaults out of fear of reprisal. In December, a man, Michael, called on the Indian government to appoint a secretary-level official to lead the investigation into a sharp uptick in incidents of persecution. Christians constitute 2.3% of India's population based on the 2011 census. However, the Christian minority has been facing growing hostility in recent years, particularly under laws and narratives advanced by Hindu nationalist groups. How's that working? Well, Mr. Modi, who seems to have considerable power and favor there in India as a Hindu, has basically decreed that that India will be an exclusively Hindu nation. Exclusively Hindu. Now, he did not, shall we say, order the Hindus to go after the Christians. But by implications, that's exactly what he did. We're going to be an exclusively Hindu nation. So the implication is go after these Christians because they don't belong here. And that's what they're doing. Radical Hindu mobs going through India, various areas of India, and traumatizing, burning houses, destroying property, beating people. A friend of mine that we supported as a pastor there in India for 10 years was beaten several times. His wife was beaten and died. Ultimately, he died. He had to ride bicycles out to get to various places in the outlying regions where they had house churches. He had started with one or two house churches when we first worked with him, and he ended up with something like 45 or 50 house churches that were scattered throughout the whole area. But he couldn't afford a car. So he rode a bicycle to get there as an apostle to go to and raise up leadership and saints in these various house churches. Well, along the way, he was stopped and beaten by Hindu thugs. In one instance, they beat his head so severely he lost his hearing. In another instance, they beat his legs so that he could barely walk. In another instance, they went to his meeting place and destroyed all of their equipment. He experienced it over and over and over again. Finally, both he and his wife passed away. Here's the situation, friend. Only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life. And you don't know how long your life is going to be. I don't know how long my life is going to be. And I was just celebrated last night, the big 8-0. But then I discovered that that's when God told Moses to get going and lead the people out of Egypt. So he had another 40 years of ministry ahead of him to get him to the promised land. We just don't know. Let's get on board. Become a partner, friends. You can help us to get the message out. You can be a doer of the word by helping us get the message out. Go to the website, saveus.org. Make your generous gift. Get a copy of the book, When Persecution Comes. $20 on our website.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.